you think you've led an interesting life, one that future generations would want to know about?
I really like the idea that in maybe 100 years, someone could listen and hear about my life to learn about what living in 2012 and 2013 was like. I think that's really cool. They could go back and I would be contributing my experience to that historical account.
That's Adam Farrow-Palmer. He's one of a bunch of Australians who've contributed to the historical account through a project with historians, the National Library of Australia and RN. And the lives of 50 of them, including Adam, are now collected in a book that's called Australian Lives, An Intimate History. Veronica Schwartz is another one of the autobiographical storytellers. Hello, Veronica.
Hi there, Amanda.
Now, how did you get involved in this, in sharing your life story?
Well, I saw an advertisement for it, years and years ago now. It's been coming and asking for volunteers. And I volunteered because I was born in 1939. I've been here on the planet a while, so I thought I had a few things to tell.
Well, tell us a little bit, first of all, about your childhood and family. Now, your early childhood was on a cattle station in the Northern Territory?
Yes, it was. Wonderful experience. I was born in Darwin and lived on the cattle station during World War II while my father was a prisoner of the Japanese on the Burma Railway.
Did you enjoy the experience of recording your memories and stories, or was it difficult, emotional? What was the sort of emotion attached to going through these sorts of memories and recollections?
Well, initially it was a bit difficult because we're taught to be modest and people don't ask us very often to sit down for 4 hours and talk about yourself. Yes. Yeah. So that was a bit different. But once we got going, Katie Holmes, the interviewer, was so good at it and helpful.
She drew you out.
Yes, she did. And
became immodest.
That's true. And she just helped me with that, and it became a joyful recollection. Even the bad times weren't so bad looking back on them.
Well, let's just hear a little bit of your story as you recorded it in 2013. Now, this is one of your very earliest memories. It's early in the Second World War and you're in Sydney.
I must have been about 2, going on 3. The very first memory is of all this noise and light and panic and people running around and us going down into some sort of enclosed space. And I later found out that that would have been the time that the Japanese submarines, miniature subs, were in Sydney Harbour, and all panic broke loose in Sydney.
Veronica, how does it feel hearing that back now?
Yes, I can still see it. Lights and noise. As a 2-year-old, you would not have a clue what was going on. I'd just be scared stiff and clinging to mummy.
Mm. Well, I mean, for many of us, our earliest memories are a little more prosaic than that. That's quite a spectacular one. Well, with us also to talk about these oral history recordings and what's been done with them are historians Alistair Thompson and Anissa Puri. They're co-authors of the book Australian Lives, An Intimate History. Alistair, collecting these stories has been a long-term project. In a nutshell, how did it originate?
It started, I'd come back from living in England for 24 years and I was in Canberra Airport and I met up with Kevin Bradley, who is the curator of oral history at the National Library, and he said he wanted to create a big oral history project recording ordinary Australians' extraordinary lives. And that's what we did. It took us about 10 years and we got funding from the Australian Research Council and worked with ABC Radio National, who made lots of wonderful radio programs, collected 300 people's life stories.
Anissa, what's the wider purpose of the project? I mean, you know, getting these stories recorded and then put into book form.
Hi, Amanda. Really, I think it's about illuminating the history of everyday life in Australia, looking at what everyday people's experiences, these people who identify as ordinary Australians, can tell us about Australian history and how people have experienced it.
What's interesting too, from the comments that have come in from on Facebook that Michael McKenzie read to us earlier, is that people's experiences, it struck me as he was reading them, are both particular to their time, but also have a sense of timelessness about them, Anissa.
That's really interesting. And I guess one of the things about oral history is that the stories people tell are also being shaped by the present circumstances that they're in. So there are all these different layers of meaning, actually, about how people experience the past, but also how they remember it and narrate it to us today.
You're listening to Life Matters with Amanda Smith, talking about Australian lives and intimate history. It's a book that draws on interviews with Australians born between 1920 and 1989 that offers a glimpse for posterity into how they've made their lives and made Australian society. Historians Alistair Thompson and Anissa Puri are the co-authors. And Veronica Schwartz, who was born in 1939, is one of the subjects of the book. Also, Adam Farrow Palmer, who was born half a century later in 1988.
My earliest memory, I think, is from a backyard barbecue and my dad teaching me to not go near the hot plate because I would burn my hands. That's a very, very early memory. Later, I remember when dad was working at the local TAFE in North Sydney. When we were going into the building, we would go into the elevator and play corner. So we'd press a button to go to the next level and we'd have to run between each corner of the lift as we were going up. And we always used to go and explore the cemetery next to it, which I believe is Gore Hill Cemetery, with all the weeds and the old. It's quite old. I don't think it's used. People are buried there anymore. But it was very exciting as a young kid going exploring through the weeds around there.
Exploring the old cemetery, one of Adam's earliest memories. Veronica's was of Japanese submarines in Sydney Harbour. And I wonder what's an early memory of yours. Mine actually is of a church steeple that I could see from my bedroom window that was on fire and burning down. I think I was about, 3 or 4 maybe. It was spectacular. You can share an early memory of your own on Facebook. Or if you'd like to follow the lead of the recordings you've heard here, record your own recollection in a voice memo and email that to lifematters@abc.net.au so that we can play it. Now, Alistair Thompson, as well as this being in printed book form, you also have an e-book version of Australian Lives. And with that, you can actually click on little microphone icons and listen to the person talking.
It's one of the wonderful things about oral history is hearing the voices. And because the National Library has really pioneered around the world a new technology where you can link text and audio online. So the book, the e-book, it's full of extracts from interviews, people like Adam and Veronica. And as you're reading any extract in the e-book, you just touch the microphone and it's like magic. It takes a few seconds and it's whizzing all its way back to the National Library archive and it picks up that extract of the interview and you hear them. So you're reading it and listening to it at the same time. And the really other really cool thing, as Adam would say, is that as you're listening to that extract, if you want, you can just carry on listening to Adam beyond what is in the book.
Yeah, yeah. Anissa Puri, what do you get from hearing these other people's lives told in their own words, in their own voices?
Well, there's so much meaning that a voice carries that just can't be captured in an edited transcript. You know, you can't read sadness and sarcasm and joy. You don't get a sense of what kind of laughter is. Is it nervous? Is it joyful? And so by listening, you get all these oral clues that tell you a bit about the person, really, and you can hear the diversity of the 50 interviewees in the book too in their accents.
And Alistair, these stories, you're not actually telling them chronologically. They're sort of snippets and around themes. Tell us more about the themes and why you've chosen that structure.
Yeah, we decided to structure the book in two main ways. One would be across the life course, so from childhood through youth, midlife, old age, so from birth to death, with ancestry at the start. And so that is tracking, for example, childhood, being a child in 1930s Australia compared to being a child in the last decade or so, and looking at change across time within a theme. We also had a number of chapters that are thematic. So there's one on migration, there's one on activism, there's one on faith, which was a very powerful theme in the book, and then there's one on just telling my story. Why did I want to tell my story to the world, and why does it matter?
Anissa, as a younger person, you're in your late 20s, I think. What do you get from the stories told by older people in this collection?
That's right. I am in my late 20s. And I think for me, as a relatively young historian, You know, working with these interviews really gave me a sense of how people actually experience the past. For instance, women often talk about how Gough Whitlam changed their lives when he came into power. But before this project, I probably didn't have a sense of what that was like for them and what that actually meant and how they experienced it. So I think it's really given me a better sense of what people actually went through and how they remember that now.
Yeah. Well, now, Veronica Schwartz, we've actually got another little grab of you speaking from your recording. I want to take you back now to your youth as a young woman beginning to date men.
Well, we all had boyfriends, and I'd had several boyfriends before this, and some of them had wanted to have sex, and I suppose I thought it was what you did when you got married, although my mother had never said that. But my God, there was a lot of stuff in the women's magazines telling you how you ought to behave and how you ought to make a man feel good and how you ought to downplay your intelligence and blah, blah, blah. In the 50s and 60s, it was a tremendous impetus to get women to focus on being feminine and wifely and catch a man and all of that. If you look back at the women's weeklies of the day, they were very much oriented to getting the wives or the women back into the home.
Well, Veronica, you later would describe yourself as a feminist. Was that an awareness that developed gradually for you, or was there a moment?
There'd been niggles for years, but the moment was there also, and that was in reading Germaine Greer's Female Eunuch in the early 70s, and I went around calling her Saint Germaine for decades. And from speaking with other women, she definitely made an impact and opened their eyes, and I joined the Women's Liberation Movement and the Women's Electoral Lobby and consciousness-raising groups, and we found that what we thought was unique to us actually was a social pattern when we exchanged experiences and realised that what was happening to each of us was actually society's way of treating women.
Now, you also got involved in politics as well as the women's movement. Tell us about your involvement in politics.
Yes, I became politically aware when I was living in Quebec, and Pierre Trudeau was rising to power at the time, and I was stunned and impressed by him.
How would you come to be living in Canada in the first place, if I may interrupt for a moment?
Well, I went away from Australia in 1964 and didn't come back for 7 years, and in that time I lived in Germany and Britain and Canada.
Right,
okay. So this was the Canadian section. And I returned to Australia, and Gough Whitlam was running his electioneering campaign. It's time, and it was. And the anti-war, anti-Vietnam War, and all of that aroused my interest, and I joined the Australia Party and then the Australian Democrats.
Yes, now what was the Australia Party? I don't actually remember the Australia Party.
That's a shame, because they were anti-Vietnam War was the driving force, but they're also anti-nuclear and anti-pollution and stood for equality.
So you were a bit of a radical rat bag.
I guess so. Didn't think of it in those days that way, yes, but I'm proud to have been, and although I can't and don't march in the streets, I still maintain that radicalism through social media and writing.
Good on you. So just take me, so you joined the Australia Party, then you mentioned you then joined the Australian Democrats.
Yes, the Australia Party actually went on to form the Australian Democrats with Don Chipp and a few others.
And you stood for Parliament, yeah?
I did twice, once in Gellibrand, a very safe Labor seat, and
in
once
Victoria.
In Melbourne, yes.
Mm-hmm. And how'd you go?
Oh, it's Snowflake's chance in hell.
Did you know that?
Of course you did. But
why did you do it then?
Because we had a Senate candidate, and to get the votes at the poll, we had to have a local candidate running for the House of Representatives and handing out the Senate papers as well. And the Senate candidate had a better chance of getting in.
Oh, I see. So it was political standing.
Yes, more noble than realistic.
Alistair, Veronica's life, well, to date, it's both individual and reflects her time. No doubt more interesting stories to add from Veronica as time goes by. But there are 49 other people in the book. On what basis did you choose these 50 Australians?
Yeah, it's a good question, and people often ask that. I mean, in a way, it was started with choosing the 300 because we had about over 700 people expressed an interest in being interviewed. We knew we'd never get a representative sample because these were people who wanted and were willing to tell their story. But we wanted to get as diverse a range of Australians as possible, both in the interview project but then in the book, both in terms of age, so from 1920 to 89, men and women, born overseas, so about a quarter born overseas because that represents Australia today, people from metropolitan, regional and remote Australia, people from different social backgrounds. So that was our aim. And I guess in the book we also knew that we wanted stories that really gripped people's imagination but also said something both about the individual life but also about the times and the context. So that with Veronica's story, you know, you've got Veronica getting polio as a kid, you've got World War II.
Yes, we didn't mention that. That's another astonishing story that you'll have to read about, I think.
Absolutely. And then domestic violence, getting politically active, becoming an older person. All sorts of aspects of Australian 20th century social history are revealed and illuminated by these different stories.
Australian Lives and Intimate History is the name of the book. Historians Alistair Thompson and Anissa Puri are responsible for it, and Veronica Schwartz is one of those Australian lives celebrated in this collection. Thanks so much to you all.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Amanda.
And if you'd like to share one of your earliest memories, love to hear from you on Facebook, or you can tell us about it by recording a voice memo and email that to lifematters@abc.net.au. It's Amanda Smith with you here in Life Matters.